Welcome back to the Loop Podcast. My name's Jamie Skills, Senior Demand Generation Manager here at Cognizant. And today I'm delighted to be joined by John James, founder at Hybrancy. And today we're going to be talking about brand campaigns and brand marketing. Welcome to the podcast, John.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for being here.
Just to kick off, do you want to just give some listeners a quick intro to yourself, sort of like what brought you onto this topic, and just a quick intro to you and what you do?
Yeah, sure. So I started my career in actually large advertising agencies. So McCann Erickson was one of my first jobs, Saatchi & Saatchi, et cetera. Then I went to a client side, digital agencies, started my own agency, and then moved to San Francisco for a period of time to work in a growth role and sort of learnt the sort of growth method from there, and then came back to Australia and have been working on some of my own projects and consulting and advising other people. So I suppose that I have that sort of a three-pronged experience between agency world, digital agency world, and then growth and tech, which is quite interesting.
It's interesting to hear you come from the agency world, particularly on some of the bits we're going to be talking about today. So actually, just to get started, so I not first came across you. I'd seen some stuff you'd posted before, but I definitely paid attention, I think it was a few weeks back now, when you wrote a few articles for Brand Mag about brand campaigns specifically that caused a bit of a stir. and got quite a big reaction. So it would be great if you could give the listeners some context about what those articles were about and what your position was and why you wrote them.
Sure. So it started when I was advising a couple of clients that were tech startups or, you know, just medium sort of private enterprises, which is kind of the niche that I stay in. So normally it's like 2 to 50 mil rev ARR kind of businesses that are privately owned. They were being sold these brand campaigns by their digital agencies. And I was like, this is kind of odd. Why are digital agencies selling brand campaigns to my clients? And they were coming back to me with questions going like, well, John, what is a brand campaign? And I was like, actually, you know, yeah, what is it? So I kind of had to find out what it is myself, because it was always a very amorphous thing. I really like what Jeff Bezos says about brand. He's like, it's this very amorphous construct, but really it's just at the heart of it, it's the company's reputation. And to explain what a brand is the first problem. Then to explain what a brand campaign is the next problem. And it sort of cascades from there. So if you don't understand what a brand is, you're going to be buying a campaign that's probably not what you need for your business at the current point in time. And this is very much true for these startups that I was advising. I was like, what are you even doing about brand campaigns? Like, you should just be acquiring customers. What are you talking about? And then these digital agencies were selling them these brand campaigns, Facebook ads and Google ads, maximizing broad reach, all these, like, you know, top of funnel, middle of funnel, bottom funnel. I was like, what are you guys talking about? So then I talked to my Google and Facebook rep, and this is what they were selling, because obviously there's a finite amount of in-market customers that you can target using Google and Facebook. So you want to capture those people that are in-market, that are ready to buy right now. That's very efficient. You can calculate a CAC and all that kind of thing. So some people refer to that as like demand capture or whatever, right? Brand is always that sort of larger thing that is looking more of the long term. Anyway, I just found it very strange that these Google and Facebook reps are recommending that my clients invest in brand campaigns. You guys, performance marketers, what are you doing? Anyway, that prompted me to then ask some other people in my network, like, what is a brand campaign? And then nobody could really explain what it was with any consistency. So I chatted to like 5 or 6 of my friends in my network, and then I got different answers. And then I went a bit further and I was like, okay, I'll do this tweet. A bit inflammatory, going, you know, brand campaigns are a scam, convince me otherwise. And then I got all these comments, which are actually really interesting. So it was intentionally inflammatory, but I think the result out of the end of that was very interesting, because nobody could really explain what it was, even people who owned multi-million dollar advertising agencies. So I was like, well, if you guys can't explain it and you're selling it to clients, they don't really know what they're buying. So what is it? So then I had to crowdsource the answer from these comments. And that was the first article, which then led to 5 more articles, because to explain that, I then had to explain many other constructs, and that's where it began. And then I sort of took off from there.
That was something that was interesting to me, was the tweet, because obviously that was what got sort of people really stirred up.
It did.
I think actually in the article, you did dive into like, there was some data and stuff that you found when you sort of started looking, going through that process. And when you first started like looking into like what is a brand campaign. So yeah, it'd be cool to sort of unpack some of that if you've got some insights into like what you sort of starting to find and like what you sort of how that linked into the overall narrative.
Yeah, sure. So like in some of the comments, a lot of people referenced the people who are kind of against me going, no, brand's like amazing. Generally referenced a couple of very famous advertising campaigns, one of which was the Apple Think Different campaign, which I know very well. And then they also referenced Got Milk. They also referenced Nike ads as well, like nondescript Nike ads. But basically what they were all referencing were these more emotional, softer sell sort of advertising approach with like a more amorphous or inspirational kind of brand mantra that was non-product specific, right? So one of the hallmarks of a brand campaign is generally you're not really talking about a product per se. You're talking about the organization and the brand itself as a larger construct, which sits above any product lines that they have. Larger companies have multiple products. So, you know, if you're doing an advertisement, like, can't you just talk about the brand itself? And then by virtue, you're kind of selling all the product line instead of having to advertise one product at each time, right? So it kind of makes efficiency sense to do that or to explore that area. Now, what I found, though, is that often these kind of campaigns are sold on the premise that they will increase revenue and sales and profit, etc. But that's actually not why they are bought by clients. They're generally bought for political reasons. And so when I did the research around the famous Apple Think Different campaign and went and deep dived into that, so I pulled like SEC reports, quarterly earnings and targets and profit margins and everything and went through the history of that. It was very interesting because that campaign was actually not really successful at growing revenue and profit as much as people probably think it did. And the same goes for the previous 1984, which is labeled the best ad of all time. That was a commercial failure. They had really good results for about 6 months and it like dipped so far back that Steve Jobs ended up getting fired from the company that he founded. And that's how bad the initiative was. It wasn't always the fault of the campaign, but my point is that these brand campaigns are sold on the premise that they will be somehow more effective at selling the product and increasing margins, etc. But normally they come from a more political genesis, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. I think actually I'd like to dial back on that a little bit because I think it's helpful at this point to reaffirm what your position was. So I think when you actually look at the face value of the tweet and like the actual, the first part of the article and stuff, very easy to get into sort of like a defensive, oh, he doesn't like brand, he doesn't understand brand. And I think that's what the initial kind of reaction was.
Yes.
But after, obviously, once you actually got into talking about the campaigns, talking about your actual position was, it seems to me that it's not about brand per se being the issue. It's about how it's used, who it's used by, when it's the right time to use it, what it actually achieves versus what it doesn't. And people selling it when actually to the wrong people and at the wrong times. That seems to be what you were criticizing above, like brand campaigns as like a concept.
Yeah, look, I'm a big proponent in the power of advertising, the power of brand. I'm a big proponent in the power of direct response advertising as well, which I think is undervalued. And I think there's this dichotomy between like direct response on one side, right? Direct response advertising are very targeted performance-y kind of things where you're taking a very qualified list, targeted advertising at those people, trying to convert them into a sale as quick as you can, versus the other extreme, which is like this pure brand campaign concept. And what I did from the first article was I tried to like explain to people, hey, this is a continuum. And then, you know, you have two extremes, but most campaigns lie somewhere in the middle. And my argument is that to invest in a brand campaign first, at least understand what a brand is, then understand like why it has to be a campaign and understand how advertising works. And most people can't explain those three things very well. And these people are making multi-million dollar decisions. So like at the very least, understand those fundamentals and then understand that most campaigns lie between that sort of continuum of those two extremes and that smaller brands that are sort of upcoming probably need to invest more in that sales thing. And by virtue, to get more customers via sales, you are increasing your brand. And this is what I think a lot of people in the brand world of advertising forget is that the way you build a brand is through sales, through penetration, through market share gains, not through some amorphous advertising concept that somehow reaches this large number of people in an emotional way that gets them to know about who you are. There's kind of elements of truth to that. There's a lot of complexity in that. But the point is, I was trying to make people think a bit better about those two extremes and then where you lie and then, you know, understand the fundamentals before you make a decision around these constructs.
Yeah, actually, I'd like to just to get your initial view on that, you do believe that you can separate the market between in market, out of market, and there are specific ways to talk to those people. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I think what the trap can be often is that a lot of people look at it as in market buyers, direct response, which obviously is logical, and then out of market buyers, brand. I'd like to get your input on sort of like how you think that dichotomy works and like how you should be talking to those two segments, and if that's actually the correct way to be looking at it. Is it like, oh, we do brand to out of market, you do direct response to in market, or is there, like you said, maybe there's a continuum and there's different roles for different campaigns?
Yeah, it's actually really interesting. I think Joel Robinson, this guy from New York who works for an agency, did this article today on LinkedIn, which I read. It was actually really interesting. So there's a bit of fallacy around this broad reach concept, right? Being on this brand side of things, if we had to talk about that first. And this comes from some of the work that Arabag Bass Institute does around to grow a brand, you have to reach the most people in your market, right? That's the first thing, is like who you're defining as your market. Like, and this is where these terms like TAM, SAM, and SOM come in when you're working in business strategy. And how you define that actually is really interesting. The position that the Ehrenberg Bass Institute makes is that most of the markets are a bit of more of a CEP or jobs to be done or use case kind of consideration. So instead of like looking for 36 to 55 year olds who are executives and, you know, whatever, that kind of targeting, it's more around like, what are they using their product for, and finding out what all those CEPs are, and then amalgamating that into your total market, which you target. And then this is when the issue comes between when we're targeting our media expenditure, and there's a lot of nuance to that. You need to understand a lot within the supply chain to make those determinants and to make sound decisions there, which is very complex. You know, depending on which, you know, channel you invest into, you need to know all the nuances of each of those channels. So example, like if I was sending email, like sure, I could get an email list of 1,000 or a couple of thousand people, but then I need to know how my email's being sent, like which domain is being used, like what's all the considerations there to get through the junk filter, which is really hard these days. So, and the same goes for Facebook, like how well are those audiences marrying up with the ones that I'm actually trying to target? There's a lot of complexity there that we need to understand. So what happens is that people who want to target in-market customers, I think it's a really good way to do it, especially in the early stages of your company. That's where you should spend all your money, is around direct response advertising, targeting as qualified buyers as you can. Now, the trade-off with that though, and you need to understand this at the time, is that the trade-off is that you are forgoing targeting people who are out of market, which is a large percentage of the market. If we're, again, looking, citing back to this Ehrenberg Bass Institute stuff, that's like 95 to 99% of the market. So in doing that, you are forgoing 99 to 95% of the growth opportunity. And you need to be aware of that. So what the brand marketing thing happens, and this is generally what happens in businesses, they teeter between the two extremes. So they start with direct response advertising targeting in-market buyers, and then they go, oh, that doesn't work, it hasn't contributed enough to grow. So then they flip-flop to like this like extreme brand thing where they just, oh no, let's just target everyone with this very emotional, amorphous campaign, and then that doesn't work, and they go back to direct response again, and they flip-flop between. So I think what these articles are trying to explain was that people are either in-market or out-of-market. Most people are out-of-market, so therefore you need to understand what is the average buying cycle length, i.e. if I bought something, how long is it until I buy again? So for a car, that could be like 5 to 10 years. For a house, it's 10 to 20 years. I work on a lot of these more complex, higher value services where this is a very acute issue with a lot of the strategy, but you need to be mindful of what that average buying cycle is, because that will then determine how much market share you can get at any point in time with your campaign over whatever time cycle that campaign is. Doesn't matter whether it's direct response or brand, whatever, right? That's the kind of way I look at it. And I think a lot of people get that wrong. And this is very hard to communicate to executives as well, especially around if you come from a digital advertising direct response kind of upbringing versus if you're coming from agency, which is very much brand, it's these two extremes. And I think, you know, the common sense area lies somewhere in the middle, and you need to have those conversations.
That's really interesting. I'd like to actually dial back, because you're talking about the middle, and obviously just a lot to unpack there. So I'm just going to try and sort of dial back a bit for the listeners. So you were talking about CEPs, jobs to be done, and much of the market being in that sort of space. And that's where the targeting should be. Is that what you're talking about within the middle? Is that like you've got on one end, you might have brand targeting completely unaware people, targeting everyone, but also targeting completely unaware people. But in the middle, there's also people who have specific challenges, have specific jobs to be done. And then you're obviously targeting category entry points that lead to basically them going in market. Am I on the right track there in terms of the way you're trying to envision it?
Yeah, for sure. You know, this is pretty complex, but the way I argue to people or advise people around this is there's things that we will see quickly as a result of our campaigns or marketing expenditure, and it's things that will have a latent effect. Now, the one thing I think that we need to get on the same page about is that if we're building brand, and let's define this right now, like brand is basically memory real estate, right? Like share of mind. Like basically we're buying memories inside people's brains. And this is what a lot of people don't understand about brand is like we are buying real estate inside people's brains. Hey, I know you and I associate you with the thing that you sell. That is a brand. Every person in the world is different, right? Because we don't clone humans. So again, this is going to vary quite a bit, but let's just take an example. You can have brand awareness, but you cannot have salience in terms of them understanding what you do. So example, Domino's Pizza, they sell takeout pizza or takeaway pizza. They don't do in restaurant pizza experiences, right? It's all takeout. So when I think of Domino's, I know Domino's is takeaway pizza, right? So if I want to enter that situation on a Friday night where I'm can't be stuffed, you know, creating food or whatever, and you know, I've got some lads around and watching the game, whatever, right? I just like, okay, let's get some salty, crappy pizzas from Domino's. That's the buying situation. Yeah. It's like, I want to have some fun. I don't want to cook. I don't care about healthy. Just get me some pizza. I'm going to think, okay, where can I get that from? And that's the buying situation. And then I think, okay, well, I know Domino's is one of the ones in there. Maybe there's two other suppliers or whatever. I look up Uber Eats, whatever, right? Doesn't matter. I'm then going to make a quick decision about, okay, which of those brands I'm going to go with. I'm going to purchase it. So that's what I mean about this memory issue that really affects, I think, a lot of the discussion around brand is that memories degrade over time. So I don't know if you've met people with Alzheimer's or, you know, memory issues, but there's memory degradation as we get older, yeah, which is accentuated. And I think a lot of the brand marketing people make the mistake of thinking that, hey, if we do this big campaign, we say, hey, we're awesome, we're this brand and we do this, then that memory is there forever. No, it's not. It degrades over time quite considerably and a lot faster than a lot of people probably realize. In fact, in the part five series, I give three studies from three different people, which determine the degradation of these memories in any advertising, doesn't matter whether it's brand or direct response, whatever. And it's actually very, very short. So you have this like massive degradation after the first experience. And I think that's what people get it wrong about this brand thing is that brands and memories are not forever and they need to be upkept, and once you've got the memory in there, you need to like maintain it over time. And that's where I think small brands try to copy this big brand playbook, which essentially the big brand playbook is they already know who we are and what we do. We're just there just upkeeping that memory, just going, hey, remember us? Like we're still here. And that's their brand playbook. And the mistake small brands do is that they go, oh, hey, they're doing this cool thing over here. Let's copy that for us. I'm like, you just don't have the equity, unfortunately, at that stage. And you're using the wrong playbook at the wrong time in your life cycle. So I think that's what people get wrong about these two things.
Yeah, I actually want to quickly touch on again what you were talking about, because you were talking about salience versus sort of aware. It would be good, actually, because I think like a lot of the kind of the marketing science and like the work the Ehrenberg Bass Institute do and stuff, that's only really starting to surface, I think, a bit in our industry in some places. So I don't think these sort of terms and discussions have been like widespread yet, but I think it's a incredibly helpful concept to actually get your head around. So could you quickly sort of break down what you mean by salience versus awareness just in like a really simple terms, and just so the audience can understand, because I think it will give some context to what you were talking about a second ago as well.
Yeah, sure. So I use this example in the article around, like, just imagine we're both going to like a party, right, with our mates or whatever. And there's some people there, we meet some couples, whatever, and they're like, hey, you know, my name's Dave. And, you know, oh, hey, Dave, you know, what do you do? Oh, I do, you know, X or whatever. And then you meet them again a couple of weeks later at the same, like another party. And you're, oh, hi, Dave, I remember you. You know, what is it that you do again? And they're like, oh, you know, I do XYZ. And you're like, oh, okay, Dave. Yeah, cool. I remember again. And then, you know, you meet them a couple of days later and then the same thing happens. You will never recommend Dave's services or whatever he does. Pretend he does carpentry services. You're not going to recommend Dave's carpentry services to any of your friends until you remember who Dave is and then what he does. And this is the difference between brand awareness and then sell-ins, is that I can be aware of who Dave is. I can remember him at sight. I'm like, oh, that's Dave. But I don't know what he does. And therefore, if I don't know what he does, I can't recommend him in a buying situation, and this is where sell-ins comes in, to recommend his services to someone who is looking for those services. And that's what sell-ins is. There needs to be a salient memory at the time of purchase. And this is the three things that Jenny Ramunyuk, which I really love her work. She's very funny, by the way. I quote her in a lot of the articles, but she says, for advertising to be effective, it has to meet three criteria. It has to reach, i.e. it has to actually go into the memory of someone. So it can't be just some bots on Twitter that, you know, have seen your ad. It has to be an actual human. Number one problem, which is really hard with media buying. Number two, it has to brand, i.e. it needs to sear in our memory. Pretend like I'm searing like a cow hide with like a branding iron. Hey, I'm John and I do X, and it's seared into your skin, but it's in our brains. And the third thing that it has to do is that it has to be easy to find and buy when we're in a buying situation. So you can create a lot of awareness, and I can be very aware of who you are, but I cannot be aware of what you do.
Yeah.
So like, what is awareness? How you're measuring it is the first thing. Number two, I can be aware of who you are and what you do, but then it doesn't come to mind when I'm in a buying situation, because pretend I really like Cadbury's chocolate and I'm at Sainsbury's or whatever, and I'm making a purchase decision about making a chocolate cake, but then the Cadbury aisle on the aisle of Sainsbury's is like sold out. So what am I going to do? I'm going to choose something else. Yeah. So like, again, it has to be put into a buying context of a real life buying situation. And these three determinants is where I think a lot of people don't understand. And when they talk about awareness, they're talking about this very topical kind of awareness of the company name, not what the company does. And that's my issue with brand awareness versus salience.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's actually quite an interesting example from B2B, to bring it back to some B2B listeners, is I think it was Salesforce, I'm not sure how long ago, a few years ago, they did a market research study. And obviously everyone knows who Salesforce are. They're massive. But they found that they, in the research study, they found that a lot of the people that they surveyed and they spoke to couldn't connect Salesforce to what they actually do, which is crazy to think about. But like, it shows that even at like a company like Salesforce, if the brand isn't built and connected into some of the points you were talking about, then you're still going to have a problem. And I think they've obviously since then, they've run a bunch of brand campaigns. They've done a lot of work internally. They've changed how they look at it. And they've sort of like addressed some of those issues, which I think is an interesting example. And like, it did, the first time I heard that story, it made me really think about, well, actually, that can happen to anyone. If it can happen to Salesforce, it can happen to anyone.
Yep.
So I think that's an interesting example for B2B. Joe, what would be good, actually, I think, from this point is, because I think you've just summarized a few points that I think are key for how you should think about brand and brand marketing. From here, why don't we go into, because actually, one point in the article, you say brand advertising isn't actually very good for generating sales. And also, you've just mentioned some points there. Should we do like a general description of what you think brand marketing should look like and what sort of best practice does look like in your view at the moment?
Yeah, I think the first thing is like, it shouldn't be a channel discussion. I make this point in a couple of podcasts that I've done in the previously, is that I think a lot of people equate brand advertising with, or brand marketing with, some kind of broader reach, TV, larger medium. And I think there's truth to that, but also a mistruth that doesn't get talked about. And that is that a lot of people equate brand marketing to like these broadcast media, which have, where you can have opportunities for general fame within the population. And that's the truth. But also the mistruth is that you can get broad reach using Facebook and Google. They're like two of the biggest reaching media platforms in the world. In fact, they reach more people than any other network. So like, it shouldn't be a discussion between we should use this channel over that channel for brand advertising because we're not getting the yields off this. And that's what I'm saying about these trade-offs around targeting. But I think all advertising should be branded. And by virtue, if it's branded, it's a brand campaign. So there should be no distinction between an unbranded campaign. Like, what is non-performance marketing? I don't know what that is. What is non-branded advertising? Like, what's the point of that? Why do you not want to advertise your brand and the thing that you do on your advertising? Like, there's no point to that. So like, that's my argument around this, is this distinction of brand advertising over here, or brand campaign versus non-brand campaigns, or some sort of direct response-y performance marketing kind of thing. And I get there's two extremes here, but like, most campaigns should be in the middle. And the mistake a lot of people make with brand advertising is that they try to not sell the product category. So they try to like sell the organization and not attach it to the category. And all brand science that we know and advertising science that we know says like one of the hallmarks, like I said, 1, 2, 3 of effective advertising has to be to associate your brand with the product category that you're in. And if you don't do that, there's no point to the advertising. There is a point in terms of political capital. And this is what I write about in terms of Think Different, Apple's campaign. This is why it's a very interesting example, is that Steve was about, like the company was about to go bankrupt. People don't know this. In 1997, like they just come off 2 years of massive multi-billion dollar losses. In fact, the company was worth less than when it first floated. So he was coming back to an organization that was about to fail. So this campaign doesn't talk about the product for two reasons. The first reason is it's a political thing. He wants to shore up political support that, hey, we're still here. But the other thing was that they didn't have any other products to market. So the first thing he did was cut 90% of the product line. And then the remaining products were products born from his predecessors, which he didn't like. So he didn't want to promote those either. So what did he do? He created this campaign that does not talk about the product. Number one, the aim was to shore up support within the stakeholders that Apple was still a company that's going to be around and they're a reputable organization. And a lot of customers were like going, well, are you guys going to go bankrupt and fold? Like, I'm not going to buy a computer if you're going to fold in a year. What's the point of that? So the whole point of that campaign was around assuring people that, hey, we're a brand and we're awesome and we're here to stay. And they don't talk about the product, not because there wasn't any products to promote, but because he didn't want to promote any of the products. And they just cut like 90% of them. So that was a thing that I think people then took as a playbook to then go, hey, let's look at Apple's Think Different campaign. And all our brand campaigns should not talk about the product. And they shouldn't associate with the product category. They should have this amorphous kind of idealism that should, you know, flow through our organization. And that's, I think, the wrong signal that people took from that campaign. And that's what I'm trying to tell people, that like good brand advertising should say like who you are and what you do, so that when people are in market, they know what you do, they can associate with the buying situation and buy you instead of somebody else. That's it. That's as simple as that.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, actually. And I think I'm sure you've seen the clip where Steve Jobs talks about marketing is about values. And I always really struggled with that. Like obviously, an incredibly intelligent guy, like way out of
that's
my league.
That's a sales pitch from the agency that he's regurgitating, I reckon.
Yeah, and I remember hearing that for the first time, and I was thinking, am I missing something? Or am I crazy? Am I just thinking about it the wrong way? But yeah, I think that's an important lesson to take from, like, you often see those examples shared, and there's a lot of nuance and a lot of like stuff that you need to take into consideration. It definitely can't be applied to like a small or medium-sized tech brand, which I think a lot of people sometimes actually try to and apply them in the wrong situations. In the article, you list out, I think, about 7 reasons why you shouldn't run a brand campaign. We don't need to dive into every one, but maybe some of the most important. It would be cool to actually just literally just run through for the audience reasons not to run a brand campaign in the style that we talked about.
Okay, so let's start with a big one. One of the big ones is, this shouldn't be said, but like if you're looking for revenue, don't invest in a brand campaign. And I think this is the way they're sold. They're sold on this sort of premise that like there'll be some sort of superior earnings result off the back of a brand campaign versus any other sort of campaign. That is not true. Brand campaigns are generally, as I just talked about with Apple's example, is that they're generally born from political considerations, or they're born from a company that is in such a dominant position that they can afford to not sell if they want to with their budget. So a CMO's gone to the agency, hey, can you make me look good and win an award so I can improve my portfolio and go somewhere else? And they're like, cool, yeah, we'll do this brand campaign that talks about whatever. You don't need to sell, like your earnings are great, so here's a campaign. And that's where the political capital comes in from a lot of these campaigns. And again, from Steve Jobs, you know, it was a bit of an assurance thing for him and his position on the board as he came back from Apple. That's a big thing. It's like if you're looking at sales, like don't invest in brand campaign. We just mentioned this small versus big brand thing. So don't use a big playbook if you're a small brand. And this is where I think a lot of small brands waste a lot of money, unfortunately. They try to, there's method to the madness here, and I'll explain an example, but just be very aware that if you're trying to act like a big brand, a lot of the way companies do that is by investing in a brand campaign to appear that they're bigger than they actually are. And just be very wary that this playbook is done by big brands for different outcomes versus sales. So efficiency, like you got a restrained budget, don't invest in a brand campaign. Like, they're going to be notoriously inefficient. In fact, this is one of the hallmarks of the benefits of a brand campaign, is that it is inefficient. And therefore, that is a Rory Sutherland in the UK talks about this. It's like costly signaling. So it's a way to say that, hey, we're bigger than we are. We can waste money on things that don't sell or that appear somewhere that nobody really cares about. It's about sort of ownership, blagging your way into the big brand playbook. So just be very conscious of that. You know, we talk about politics as well, obviously, with the Steve Jobs example. But I think one of the big things is that CMOs buy into this because they can create this kind of novel solution. So, hey, everything we've done in the past in marketing kind of hasn't worked. So therefore, let's explore this new area. That's kind of new and cool, whatever. And I can associate with that project. And then I can use that to move up the chain or use in my interview or the next place that I want to go to. So like, there's a bit of like novelty that sort of seeps into here, I think. You know, like, people get bored with the things that are actually working and go, hey, we need to create something different. I think that's true of like all advertising and all marketing to some extent, but especially when it comes to brand campaigns. And I think the other thing is just practically, if you have one product, what are you doing a brand campaign for? Like, you only have one product. You should at least mention the product. So I get it if you have a portfolio of products where you can communicate one campaign and hit on all of those products lines at the same time. But you should probably shouldn't be entertaining this idea if you just have one or two products. And that's, I think that's the major things that you need to be aware of. And I think the last thing maybe is this pogo sticking as well. So I mentioned this before, but people going from direct response to brand back again, you should be playing in the middle at all time. Every direct response ad should be branded. And if you're getting sales from that is increasing your brand. And every brand ad should be selling as well. And if it's not selling, what are you doing? I didn't get it.
That's interesting. And I think, yeah, that's an important distinction to be drew in terms of size as well. Like what you were talking about, like if you are a huge brand and you're able to spend that kind of money and like it's not as much of an issue, but when you're a small to medium tech brand, like even like if you're going to go down the route of talking to certain buyers differently and not making the same sort of sell that you would in a direct response ad, like ultimately that still needs to have a return. How you measure that and stuff is like that's another question. Yes. But actually, I think we're coming on to our last question, which has actually flown by, to be honest. We love to finish on this question. Basically, we ask everyone, what do you think marketers should stop doing and start doing in 2024?
Ooh, okay. This is an interesting one. So let's set the context, because I think I've been through three eras. And I think the first was the death of traditional advertising agencies and their birth of digital advertising, which I really got into very early. That sort of then peaked in 2015, 16, and then it's sort of been a bit of a yield decline, i.e. it's getting more expensive. We've seen this with the increased cost of Google and Facebook advertising. You don't see these entrepreneurs going, hey, I figured out this hack on Instagram and I've got this like D2C brand that's like earned millions of dollars. You don't see that story anymore. So I think a lot of those digital mediums that were the disruptors are now maturing. And we're at this very interesting stage where there's this kind of throwback, and this is where this brand campaign thing comes from in the first place. It's like, it's a bit of a throwback towards an increased appetite for some of these other mediums or channels or ways of selling the product and growing our brand. And that's where I think this gets very interesting, because you get two people in two camps. You get these old school marketers, right, from traditional agencies, and these new school people that are more in digital agency era, and I've been in both, I understand it. But the digital people tend to be very institutionalized around analytics platforms and like looking at feedback loops and whatever. And I think that's being disrupted right now from this privacy issue around cookies, and that's affecting the granularity and accuracy of that feedback loop that digital media was extremely good back in the day to use, because we knew there was cause and effect. So we kind of trust it. We go, hey, this produced 10 customers, so let's like put more money into there, right? Because we can measure the results. And now that's a bit more cloudy. People are sort of in this weird no man's zone going, well, is it still working? I don't know. And then you've got Facebook with Kappy and these MMM platforms and stuff coming out going, well, you know, it's doing something. And basically there's this competition to have the best attribution of whatever channel that you're doing. And I think there's this really interesting moment right now where there's this merging of old school and new school channels together. And that's what I'm trying to educate people around, is that I think there's some really interesting yield, coming back to a question, around some of these forgotten old media that perhaps if we've grown up in this digital era that we're not familiar with, we don't know how to execute, we don't understand them, we don't know how to measure them, but they can have really, really good yields. So I used this example at this this talk I did at South by Southwest Sydney last year around this gym using direct mail, so chunky mail, right? So basically it was a boxing glove hand-delivered by a courier to CEOs inside downtown Sydney, right? To then work out at this and join this gym that was just down the road in Circular Quay, very elite kind of gym. And basically they used this like FOMO effect of these CEOs wanting to outperform their other fellow CEOs, which they knew. So like, hey, if you're not working out and your other CEO is, then like, what are you doing? He's beating you kind of thing. So they use a bit of that sort of competition effect, but they also delivered this whole campaign through chunky mail, which is this very manual process. And they're very successful, by the way. Like this was their launch, $0 to $1 million through one medium, which is chunky direct mail. Now, if I said to you, hey, I've got this new gym, what's the best way of growing it? You'd probably say to me, hey, you know, get in social media. A lot of people on social media are doing workout videos and blah, blah, blah. They completely ignored all that and went that way. So I think I'm trying to make people understand that, hey, all channels have their pros and cons. And I think we should be very aware of that. And like maybe launch outside your comfort zone when it comes to channel investments and mix a bit of the old with the new. And I think that's when you get this very interesting dynamic happening because you are capturing people that wouldn't otherwise be captured by just one investment. And I think that's where it gets very interesting with marketing.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. So to be honest, it's something at Cognizant that we've like dabbled in. We're trying to sort of get outside of sort of the core sort of LinkedIn and et cetera. And like, there's a few things we've done. We've done like direct mail with like t-shirts and activations like that, just to sort of engage people and we've dipped our toe in. But I think that actually could be a really good follow-up conversation. I think it'd be great to have you back on to talk about blending those two dynamics. That would actually be a really interesting conversation.
Yeah, and on the flip side, like I have this client who used to be called Sotheby's, right? You know Sotheby's, the auction house in the UK, right? Like Christie's and Sotheby's. Yeah. So they're called something else in Australia now. They're one of my clients. We send like $1 million artworks to them. Like everything is like $10,000 to $1 million, right? So these are very hard to find people, right? I know some of the people who buy these things. I can't discuss who they are, but they're heads of state. Yeah. They're very, very well known Hollywood elite, etc. Right? Now to target those people, I actually recommended we use LinkedIn ads and stuff like that. And like, you know, let's like take the email addresses and create a very targeted audience. But like, I'm also going the flip side. So they do that sort of that event thing, that very personal sales approach very well. So what I was doing was complementing it with the digital side of things, which then sort of gave the best of both worlds, if you know what I mean. And that is extremely effective. And I've been using LinkedIn ads for that because a lot of the finance execs and stuff are on LinkedIn like sparingly, but they're there. And I've had, very interesting yields from that. So it's been interesting.
Interesting takeaway, actually. Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, I think it'd be great to actually have you back on to talk about that. So I think that's a topic a lot of our listeners really, really get some value from. But yeah, I think that's everything. John, that was actually such a great conversation. I really enjoyed that. I hope you've had a good time on the pod. Thanks for joining us.
Always. Yeah. Thank you very much, Jamie. It's been a great conversation. So yeah, anytime, give me a call.